The kings and queens of England in times gone by often chose to stay in Greenwich because of its beautiful surroundings, rich hunting grounds, and easy access to London, which was achieved by taking a royal barge along the river to either the Tower of London or to the palaces of Westminster and Whitehall. The Tudors in particular spent a lot of time in Greenwich, in their palace, which used to stand here before it was demolished in the late 17th century. This is where their children were born, their marriages celebrated, and where their feasts were held. In fact, arguably our most famous king, Henry VIII, was born here on the 28th of June, 1491. His two daughters, Queen Mary I and Elizabeth I, were also born here in 1516 and 1533, respectively. Henry is famous, of course, but not because of anything he did as king, but for his scandalous personal life and his six wives. In Greenwich Palace, he married his first and longest-serving, or suffering, wife, Catherine of Aragon, and then, over 30 years later, he officially met his fourth wife, Anne of Cleves, just outside the gates of Greenwich Park. But Anne and Henry's marriage was a disaster from the start. Henry had chosen Anne as his fourth wife, based entirely on her portrait and complimentary descriptions of her by his courtiers. On the day Anne arrived here to Greenwich, Henry wanted to surprise his betrothed in an old courtly love tradition. So he disguised himself as an ordinary man and went to see her before their official meeting. He arrived looking a bit rough and found Anne staring out the window at some bull baiting that was going on below. Without warning, he embraced and kissed her and handed her a gift he said was from the king. She was abashed and embarrassed and had no idea who he was, so she thanked him, then turned back to continue looking out the window. Henry, disappointed she didn't realize it was him, her new true love in disguise, left the room, put on a luxurious cloak, and came back in to show Anne and her ladies who he was. After that, Anne tried to speak to him, but the damage was done, and immediately Henry told his courtiers, quote, "I like her not." From then on, he complained that the portrait he saw of her was too flattering. He then claimed she was too old, too fat, and that she had, quote, "evil smells about her." We have no account of what Anne thought about her future husband, but judging by other contemporary descriptions of the king, she could have easily said the same about him. Some who met the king around that time say that he was so large, three men could fit inside of him. On top of that, he had an ulcerated wound in his leg, which was so putrid, palace guests could smell the king coming before he actually entered the room. Historians today believe Anne probably looked as beautiful as people claimed, but that Henry was so embarrassed by their initial meeting, he could never recover enough to feel love for her. However, the two did become good friends after their marriage was over, and it seems as though there were no hard feelings, probably because Anne was more than happy to get out of her strange and strained marriage. Henry's life, of course, was not purely drama and scandal. He may not have been a brilliant husband, but he was very well educated and understood the value of education for both himself and his children, including his daughters, at a time when women weren't educated. From a very young age, Henry was tutored in many subjects. He was fluent in Latin, Greek, French, and Spanish. As a child, he exchanged letters with Erasmus of Rotterdam, and the great scholar praised Henry's talents and knowledge. After the Reformation, when many Catholic monasteries were shut down, he turned the buildings into schools, enabling many more children to gain an education. And, most relevant to where our tour is today, Henry was the one who founded the English Navy. He invested in shipbuilding, increasing the number of England's warships 8 times over. He encouraged dock building, invested in firepower to be held on board his new ships, and created the Council for Marine Causes, which oversaw maintenance and operation of the Navy, and went on to govern the Navy under a different name, the Admiralty, all the way until 1964. Now, walk slowly away from the river between the two buildings and towards the road, listening to the next clip. Stop when you get to the steps ahead of you.